You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I'm your host, Carl Tart. It's about to be lit. This is the littest episode of Long Form Conversations podcast. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host, so y'all know it's about to be turnt. And my guest today is Miss Julie Brister, who improv fans might know from being the best teacher ever. She's so tight. I've never even had her as a teacher, and I know she's dope.
That's so nice.
What? You're from New York, UCB?
Yep. Yep, I moved here from New York in 2006.
Nice. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Lubbock, Texas.
Nice. I'm just watching a story about a dude from Lubbock today on this show called Undrafted.
Oh, about football?
Football players who don't get drafted but still have to try out for teams.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Tech has a very, no, this has nothing to do with improv, but Tech has a very, like, young coach.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see this? They did like a whole wrestling thing, like.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was amazing.
With the with like a John Cena impersonator.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and I was that made my heart a little bit warm.
That's great. So when did you start doing improv in New York?
I started doing improv in 1997.
Yeah,
that summer. I knew that I wanted to do something comedy related. I didn't want to do stand up. I had done that for a while and got to the point where I really didn't like it.
Gotcha.
And I asked a friend who had a toe in that world. I said, "What do I do? That's just not a regular acting class, and you should take improv," which I didn't know anything about. And he told me to either go to Chicago City Limits, mm-hmm. which was very far from my apartment, or to the Upright Citizens Brigade, which was five blocks from my apartment. So I went to UCB.
Well, let's take it back for a second. When did you move to New York? Did you go to college there? Or?
No, I went to college in Texas at a school called Southwestern University. It's a small private Methodist college right outside of Austin.
Nice.
And then I spent my last semester of school interning in New York City at an acting studio. And then when that semester was over, I just stayed in New York.
Okay.
Did you
like it? Like coming from Texas?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. Like,
yeah.
It's all I wanted from the time I was really little was to move to New York and live in New York.
Never had aspirations to come to LA?
No. Like, I was kind of an asshole about LA. Not having been here, so, I came to LA when I was 12.
Yeah.
But, like, I would be like, L.A., like, I was one of those people. And then when I came here on a visit, also, like, in 1997, the moment I arrived, I was like, I like this. I really, really like it. I was here in, like, December, and the weather was great, and I totally loved L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would come back every couple of years until I decided to move on out.
When my mother graduated from college, we're from Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And when she graduated from college, she was, you know, deciding between L.A. and New York because she's also a theater person.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's,
yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, she went to college for theater and stuff. And when she was like, oh, should I go to New York or L.A.? And, like, L.A. just seemed so much easier to live in New York because when you think of New York, you think of gritty,
mm-hmm.
rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junk is in the alley with the baseball. Like, you know, like, you think
it's
of that.
It's so true.
Yeah. And so, like, you just think, like, city life.
Yeah.
It's like, L.A. is like, yeah, dude. Like,
well, New York, New York used to have an edge.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it doesn't have an edge at all anymore, but I liked that. I wanted to live someplace sort of dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And But when I moved to LA, LA is still more dangerous. Than New York. LA is a lot more dangerous.
It's hard
than
out
New
York. Here too. It's hard out here too.
And I like both places, but New York really wears you the fuck out after a while. And I didn't think I would ever leave New York. I let my driver's license lapse. Like I was like, I'm here forever.
Yeah.
And then I was married at the time, and when we decided, like I think that we have more opportunities out there, I had to take driver's ed in New York City, which was the best.
Yeah.
And did my test there so I'd be ready to move on out here. And I don't know. I just haven't looked back. I love it out here.
That's great. That's great. So that first improv class in 1997, mm-hmm. who was your teacher?
My very first thing I ever did was a workshop, and it was with Tina Fey.
Oh, wow.
Because Tina had just moved to New York to write for SNL, and Amy Poehler put together a workshop of ladies. It was an all-lady workshop, and we did scenes for a couple of hours, and then for the last hour or so, all the girls sat in a circle and talked about their frustrations as improvisers working with dudes. Mm-hmm. And I had never taken an improv class at this point. I'd been going to shows. My first class with Ian Roberts was starting like in another week.
Okay.
But she let me do this workshop. And listening to these girls talking about like nobody pays attention to my initiations, or I'm made, you know, I'm always made it like girlfriend or mother or a wife, et cetera, or hooker. And I was like, is this what's going to happen? And so when I started improvising, I like had my dukes up. I was ready to scrap.
Yeah.
But that was never my experience. Like I never felt marginalized ever.
Was there house teams at UCB back then, or was it just like the UCB 4 doing shows?
UCB 4 would do shows. They would do ASCAT every week, and ASCAT was always packed. And then there would be other shows during the week. The very first show I remember going to was like it probably was a Herald, and I didn't realize it then, but it was a team. It was a team that had Billy Merritt, and then New York improviser and teacher who's amazing named Michael Delaney.
I've heard that name.
And Michael's wife, Linda, and I think Sean Conroy was on this team, and they did improv for a little while, and then after that, UCB would come out and do sketches, and they did sketches then that I saw later on the improv on the UCB show on TV, and in the audience, it would be like six people in the audience. It would be very small in an already really really tiny theater. And then as their school grew and as their reputation grew, the audience grew.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's so tight. So when did you get on your first house team?
So when I started, if you were in class, you were on a team.
Oh, okay.
So that was the initial model. So I was in a practice group with Ari Vukitis and Chad Carter and this guy named Tom Blake. And a really funny guy named Jeff LaGreca, a bunch of fun people. And we were made into a team called Mexican Popsicle. And that was my very first team. And we knew the Herald at that point. We knew the structure. But honestly, it was like practice. You're on stage ostensibly doing a show, but you're still kind of learning how to trust each other and learning how to have fun within that structure.
Gotcha. That's so tight. That's cool. What was the first, was that around the time of when the theater started to get more popular and the audiences got bigger? Or?
Eventually they did. Like, it took a while for Herald Night to catch on. Like, I don't remember the audience being full for a while, for Herald Night, like maybe even a couple of years.
Were you guys in that basement at the time?
We were no, we weren't in the basement. We were on 22nd Street at what used to be the Harmony Burlesque Theater, and then the very first UCB Theater, which was such a great space, and it was so wonderful and down and dirty, and the door at UCB, like you go through the front door, so like you would always, if you're sitting in the audience, you always see people kind of coming in or leaving, and then there was like a side area with benches where people could sit and watch. And on stage, you would always be aware of kind of people coming or going. It was kind of a funny setup. But that theater, probably, I think that they would get maybe, I don't know how many people they would get in there, maybe 100 if they're cramming people.
Mm-hmm.
But it closed down. Boo.
Yeah. So who were some like teachers that you had coming up through the programs that really influenced you to keep going?
Ian Roberts was my level one teacher. Amy Poehler was my level two and level three teacher. Then I had Besser for three. There were only three levels at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just kind of go back and forth between Besser, Ian, Walsh, Amy. I had Amy three or four times.
That's crazy.
And Amy is my favorite teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they're all great. But Amy, as a teacher, I learned more as a teacher having her as a teacher. So I hope that I can impart some of what I got out of her classes to my own students, because she was so supportive.
Yeah.
And yet she was very firm. She had no problem telling you that to stop doing something or to point out a habit or to give you an adjustment without saying, well, I would have done it like this, because I don't think that's helpful. You know, she would deal with the choice you made and not the choice that she would have made.
That's so cool.
Yeah. She was amazing.
Did you know back then that you would be a part of this, what it is today? Like, you were at the ground floor of this
whole
thing.
Oh, hell no, because it was already, it's a weird thing. I was already 30, in my early 30s when I started, and everybody else was 22. So I always kind of felt like, hey guys, no, I'm not going to go out. I've got to go home and go to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, like I was a part of the community, and yet I always felt like I also had another life outside of this place. And I still feel that way.
Gotcha.
In a million years, I never would have thought that I would still be doing this. But also I never at that time would have imagined that UCB would have, transformed into what it's transformed into such a huge business.
From if you were in classes, you get on a team, to now 700 people auditioning for Harold Night.
Oh yeah,
and
like, yes, exactly. And we didn't even have auditions for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we didn't have auditions, I think, until 2000, maybe 1999, 2000, like maybe even a little. I think it was around then, like if memory serves, it was a while.
Yeah.
It was like Besser kind of deciding who was on a team, going from that point until, you know, to the point that we had auditions. And initially we had a Harold team committee, and I was on that committee.
Mm-hmm.
That would hold auditions and decide who was on a team and kind of manage Harold Night.
That's so cool. Can I ask you something? I hope this doesn't take the show off the rails, but we kind of discussed it in the last episode. Why our sweatshirts say don't think. What does don't think mean to you? Because I find myself thinking a hell of a lot.
Oh, me too. But like, don't you find, though, that when you respond like as the character,
mm-hmm.
like if you are really embodying the character, that you don't have to think as much?
Yeah.
Like if you're affected emotionally, that you're not having to think or plan or worry about it. Like those to me are like the most magical moments on stage, when you're really in the zone and really, really just being the person that you're trying to portray, rather than focus on than just conveying the idea.
Yeah. So does don't think I'm also outing myself as a fraud right now. The fact that I'm on a Herald team and I don't know what don't think means. But,
like, no, but yet you do know, right?
Yeah,
like I'm sure you've thought about that.
I have. I've thought about it but I find like when I made the transition from like doing Second City IO style and coming over here and it says don't think and I'm like, there's so many rules to this Herald, to the way it's like the formula, like I have to think about this while I'm doing it. And then sometimes I find myself being in a character and not thinking about the next thing. And I say that next thing and it gets a huge laugh because it's the most natural thing I could have said, the most organic thing I could have said.
Mm-hmm.
But it might not have been on game or something like that, you know?
Right. But like talking about on game, because mm-hmm. I think that this is where students and some performers, I think really get in their heads is thinking about the game or hunting for the game or feeling like you have to have an awareness of the game before it even begins,
mm-hmm.
you know, or decide what the game is. Like sometimes somebody will initiate something to you where it's like, well, that's an easy thing that we can a premise that's going to be easy to attach ourselves to and that we can kind of follow along as the scene progresses.
Yeah.
However, if we start a scene organically and if we're really just connecting with each other and focusing on our partner, that kind of game ultimately to me is the most satisfying kind of game,
mm-hmm.
where you're really building it together without having the benefit of a premise there. I think both are valid. I think that also game is very subjective.
Yeah.
The game is whatever you enjoy repeating with your scene partner, you know, and if we kind of take the pressure off that it feels that it has to be a complex thing or that it has to be a very structured thing, that the game is better that way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's more natural.
That's great.
Right?
Oh, man, this is great. Y'all getting a masterclass right now on the most lit episode of UCB Long Form Conversations podcast. I hope everybody's got a bottle of Hennessy in their hands. I'm making this. I've always wanted to be a radio host, and so that's why I'm doing this way.
Who's your favorite radio host?
Big Boy in the Morning here in Los Angeles. I moved here when I was like 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
And just listening to him in the morning and going to school every day was always the most fun. Big Boy's Neighborhood. Like, he's just got, like, they're on those morning radio crews.
Uh-huh.
So what?
Mine is Terry Gross.
Terry Gross? From
NPR.
Oh, yeah.
I love Terry Gross.
Latch Me Sing?
I can take Latch Me.
Yeah, but Terry Gross.
And Michelle Norris.
Yeah.
But Terry Gross. Yeah, I like Terry Gross.
I like, do you listen to Snap Judgment on NPR?
Yes, I do.
I like him.
Yeah.
I like Glenn Washington.
Yeah,
I added him
good.
On Facebook.
Oh.
Yeah, I usually don't add people that I don't know, but I was like, I'm going to add. He came up.
And he said yes?
Yeah, he accepted me as a friend. And he likes some of my stuff sometimes.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that's cool. Yeah, I like the show. Do you do storytelling?
I do.
That's
I
fun.
Do from time to time. I do like it a lot.
It's really fun.
I did The Moth once in New York. And then I've done various shows here. I haven't done The Moth here since I've lived in LA, but I always look and see what's coming up and think, you know, rack my brain thinking, mm-hmm. what story would I tell? And then I never go.
Yeah. So what improv exercises do you love and hate and why? Like, is there anything that you, that may be in the curriculum here that you refuse to teach or something? I will not teach that because I disagree with it.
One of my favorite, this is sort of an exercise. Like I think if I have any skill as a teacher is I think I'm pretty good at creating a team out of the class,
mm-hmm.
and getting people to connect with each other. So there's an exercise that I love called factoids. And I do that with groups that I coach. Like any time that there's a new group or any first day, I think it's a great exercise to do. And the way that factoids works is, I don't think I've ever, I've never coached a team you've been on. So
no.
You've never done factoids.
Never
Carl.
Done factoids. I don't know what factoids is.
Everybody meanders around the room, but Marla's done it. Everybody meanders around the room and then one at a time in no particular order. And you're going to go, you're going to talk multiple times. Somebody's going to stop and they're going to tell a factoid about themselves, a true fun fact or an anecdote, like a little, a very brief encapsulation of a larger story.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody's talking, everybody else stops and gives their attention to that person and then moves on when it's done. So it's like a lot of walking and then stopping and listening, or one person talking and then moving on to the next thing. And then the goal here is to create a series of threads. So you're going to have like a pet thread. You're going to have a terrible roommate thread. You're going to have this is a food that makes me sick thread.
Yeah.
You're going to have some similar stories, and then you're going to move off when that thread feels played out, so that you have like a whole bunch of things that are like that. And then and then you're always walking between the factoids and anecdotes, and you're walking for like 3 to 5 seconds as like a little palate cleanser. I encourage people to be very honest, very truthful, not to be jokey, and also not to shit on somebody else's thing. So if somebody says that they love something that you hate, just hold it in rather than saying that you hate that thing, because the goal here is to establish trust. It's a great trust exercise. And then for upper levels, I have people do scenes off those factoids. And that's fun. It's so fun because it's all personal tidbits. And that's, to me, that's always the best improv, is stuff that comes out of a personal thing.
Yeah.
Rather than something else that has no personal relation.
Yeah, it's fun to even bring that up when you're playing and something happens in a scene and you're like, oh, I have a personal connection to that.
Right, exactly. And so when somebody initiates off of your story, it makes you feel good,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you trust that person a little more. So if we do that, like in the beginning of a team, it really helps people get to know each other and like each other. And I know that there are other exercises that do that. Some people like even just doing like a monologue hotspot or what's the one where you hate the person next to you? Hate my neighbor, that
I don't know.
I don't like it. I don't like that one as much. I like okay. I like mine.
Yeah.
I like my exercise better.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my favorite.
That's awesome. What's a great indie team that you? What's your favorite indie team that you've ever been on? And why are your favorite?
Oh, I was on a really fun indie team in New York called Giddy.
Mm-hmm.
That was me, Rachel Mason,
nice.
Christina Gausis, and then Rebecca Johnson played with us. I can't remember if she was on the team or if she was like a guest. That was a really fun team. I've had like a few different teams here. Like 2-3 person teams that have been fun. I haven't done as much of that like in the past couple of years as I did maybe when I first moved here. When I first moved to LA, I did a 2-person group with, do you know Amanda Tate?
Yeah.
Called My Old Lady. And that was fun because Amanda and I are both like, we like glamorous things.
Yeah.
So it was like a lot of like ladies in fancy feathered bathrobes.
Amanda Tate's lipstick is always popping. Shout out to Amanda Tate's lipstick.
Oh yeah. Her lippy is goes on for days and days and days. Nobody rocks a red lip like Amanda Tate
does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her in a while.
She's doing music now.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
What were some, and this is an interesting question, what were some seminal moments of success or failure in your time as a student?
Oh, well, I think that this is important to say, because I think a lot of improvisers feel this way, but I hated myself in class.
Mm-hmm.
And I did for a long time. And in my level one, I had to convince myself every week to go back to class mm-hmm. because I didn't feel funny, and I didn't feel like I really fit in with like the tone of that class. Mm-hmm. And it made me extremely self-conscious. And I remember like early on looking around being like, am I the crazy one? Am I the crazy one? Who's the crazy?
Yeah.
Who's the crazy one? I think I'm the crazy one. And I may have been the crazy one. I don't know. But I did not feel confident improvising.
Gotcha. In class.
And I would walk to class every week being like, I don't want to go. And then I would go to class and I would have fun, but I would also have moments of despair. Mm-hmm. And that was in my level one. In my level two, things got easier. I think also because of my teacher was like Ian was great, is an amazing teacher, but Amy, like she really was good at building like the social structure of the class, and things got a little easier. But I never felt truly confident, and I still don't. Mm-hmm. Like when I do an improv show, I love it. I have fun, but I always have butterflies. I always feel nervous. And I remember Amy telling us, improv is not comfortable. And if you're comfortable, there's something, then you're probably not a very good improviser.
Ooh.
Like oh, if man. You're completely comfortable before a show, if you are relaxed and like this is no big deal, then that's a little cocky. And that was a huge relief to me because I always had nerves. Well, and I also have anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like I'm an anxious person anyway. I have reached a point now as an improviser where that's fine, where I can kind of breathe it out or where it's not a big deal. But I really struggled. And I also struggled with game. And I remember taking a Besser class, Besser was also a good teacher, but a totally different teaching style than like Ian and Amy, mm-hmm. I remember we had a class. I swear to God, all we did was the pattern game. I don't even remember doing scenes. I just remember doing the pattern game for 8 weeks. And sometimes he would be like, "Do a pattern game by yourself," and he'd go pony, and you're like, carousel, popcorn, you know, yeah. Where you were just doing like a one word pattern game all on your own. And when we would practice pattern game as a group, it took me so long before I could add.
Yeah.
Before I could step in and add something. And it took me so long before I could get ideas. And that, I mean, honestly, I was performing on a Herald team for at least a year before I felt like, okay, I can get two ideas out of the pattern game.
Can we talk about the pattern game for a second?
Yes.
And like, How do you teach the pattern game? What is your philosophy on it? Because sometimes I feel like I'm doing it right, and then sometimes it's, you know how something can seem easy, and then you're like, I must not be doing this right. Because the fact that we keep like having to go over it so much, because some teachers will make us do the pattern game again, do it again, we got to get it right. Pam Murphy, who was my 301 teacher, we like really, really focused on pattern game a lot. And I'm like, wait a minute, what am I supposed to be doing? Is it just like am I seeing a word? Am I trying to get back to this original thought? Like, what? So how do you approach teaching it?
Do you remember in 301? Like, there's an example that there's an example that they give that came out of a workshop mm-hmm. that Besser did with teachers. So this was like people that have been improvising for a long time, and this was probably in the eighth week or the 12th week of this workshop on the pattern game. And I haven't taught 301 in a while, but I feel like it starts it's like whiskey, 2 a.m., vulnerability, saggy boobs, warmth. Like it has that. This is not the order, and I'm not doing it correctly. But it's all one word pattern game. Mm-hmm. And when you read it on the page, it's really like a beautiful pattern game. It's like that is a beautiful. They go 10 words out before they come back. It's just like perfect. I've never done a pattern game like that ever. Again, personal details are what I respond to and what I listen to. So when somebody says the smell of your aunt's breath, that is going to stick with me more than saying halitosis.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So like when I teach the pattern game, I encourage more phrases and more personal tidbits and more character perspective stuff, because that's what resonates with me. And that's how I learned how to get information from the pattern game. If it's just a cow, pig, barn, meadow, silo, like,
yeah,
no, well, that's all A to B. But like, you know what I mean? If it's just one word, I have a really hard time extrapolating the idea out of a one word pattern game, as opposed to something that feels like human.
Yeah.
You know,
We talked about that a lot in the last episode, being
with
human.
Gilly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Being human in scenes. And like, if you can't identify the game, what your scene partner is trying to set up for, it's OK to just ask them, like, is this what you are telling me to do?
Uh-huh.
Like, and not in that way, but like, are you saying, wait a second, are you saying that this is this?
Yeah.
This how you feel? And like, it's okay, like, cause
to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's a helpful thing.
Yeah.
But like, I know that some teachers really love that strict one word pattern game.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that as an improviser, I find I have a much harder time finding inspiration out of that.
Gotcha.
I might add to that pattern game, but I'm going to be stepping out with somebody who stepped out before me, and I probably won't be initiating.
Yeah.
I think we all have different opinions on that.
That's great. That was the most lit opinion, because it's the most lit episode of UCB Long Form Conversations. What advice do you have for students of improv?
What advice?
It's probably a little early in the episode that we should be talking about this.
What advice? It depends on what the issue is. Like, I think that it's good to take a break.
Good to take a break from it? Like, for mm-hmm. a long break?
Not a long break, but I think we reach that point where it's not fun
mm-hmm.
sometimes.
Yeah.
And when you hit that point, it's time to take a break. It's time to go take a class at Color Me Mine. It's time to hang out with your dog. It's time to do something that's not improv for a while, and then go back to it. Like, I think that that is I think that's a good thing to do. Because when you come back, when you restart, like, it's going to feel new again, in a way that you're going to learn something else, something new about yourself mm-hmm. as an improviser. I also think it's good to take, like, I think it's helpful to take from a variety of different, like, teachers or different points of view, or even different schools if you want to.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that that's a bad thing at all, because ultimately we all teach the same thing. We all teach the basic fundamental rules of improv. It doesn't, like, be it UCB, be it Groundlings, be it Second City. We're all teaching yes and.
Yeah.
And we're all teaching to make your partner the most important person in the scene. And so it's all the as you keep going, and as you keep going up the levels, when you get like nuance, or when you get like a different point of view or a different philosophy, like, I think it's helpful. I think it's helpful to learn what those different things are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, who did you take? Who have you taken with improv wise?
Teachers here at UCB,
or just in everything.
In everything. I took here is Joe Hartzler and Pam Murphy and Brett Christensen
mm-hmm.
and Fernie, and then Second City, I had some really great teachers like Matt Craig and Ithamar Enriquez mm-hmm. and Keegan Michael Key. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was great.
The best.
Jamie Moyer.
No, yeah, Jamie's wonderful.
One of my favorites.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's really fun. And I had some great, great people. I think I like the Detroit guys a lot.
Yeah, that's right. Jamie's Detroit, right?
Mm-hmm. And Josh Funk. and Keegan. All three of those guys are Detroit folks. Mary Beth Monroe.
Like,
great. Detroit improvisers, I don't know. They approach it from like a, I don't know how to describe it.
But is there still a second city in Detroit?
There is not.
Oh,
the only second cities are Chicago, Toronto, and here.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm fascinated by Detroit.
The city itself?
Yeah. Well, especially right now. Like, I think that if I were 22, I'd want to move to Detroit.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because of like the new age, like.
Yeah. Like, it's a really creatively fertile time, I think, to live in that city.
I like Austin. I was there a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lived in Austin I was right outside of Austin, but I lived in Austin for a while. It's very different now than it was when I was living there in the 80s.
I think New Orleans is a jam, too.
Oh, the best.
Yeah.
The best. Have you lived in New Orleans?
No. I'm from Mississippi.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's from Mississippi. My mother's from Macomb. I think we had this conversation.
Yeah, Macomb
once.
Up north. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
And my dad's from Louisiana, so I've spent a fair amount of time.
So you were living in Austin for a while, you said?
I did. In college.
Oh, is that where your school was?
Yeah, it was in Georgetown, which is now basically part of Austin. It's in North Austin.
Okay.
I went back there last year because I did Out of Bounds, and I had doing my solo show at Out of Bounds. And it was the first time I'd spent any time in Austin in a long time, in almost 30 years. And, man, I had a blast. And I have friends that... I have friends that live in Austin that have lived there for many, many years, and I stayed with them, and I was like, I could easily do this,
yeah.
Slide back into this kind of life.
Living, yeah, yeah.
Because it felt so good. It felt so familiar. But it's hard to – I also lived in Austin before Dell. Before Dell Computers established itself in Austin, and Austin is like a – was a little bit of a different place then. Like, it was just a place where you just, you know, sit in your porch and drink beer and smoke pot all day. And like, maybe you worked, maybe you didn't. And now I feel like there's more ambition.
Yeah. The improv scene was pretty bubbling there when we went.
It's very inspiring.
Yeah. They follow the UCB like method of teaching. They had like the Herald map. They had that on the wall at the theater we were at.
No, it's totally. It's. I find it very inspirational, and also that they have so many places. It's incredible. Because when I lived there, it was just Esther's Follies, which was not an improv school or anything. It was just like this random comedy review that they did once a week.
Huh. Well, a comedy review, like an old school comedy review,
sort of.
Like Hee Haw.
Oh, that would be so good if it was like Hee Haw, but it wasn't. Like, I went once, and I can't really speak of it now because I didn't go when I was just there. It was just like the only game in town, you know. That was like, if you wanted to do comedy, that's what you would do.
Yeah. So when you first you mentioned a little bit before about not feeling great in classes. But when you perform, because there's this thing in sports called practice players and game players.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
In practice, you're real good. You make every shot. When the game, when the pressure's on, you're missing. You're shooting bricks. And then, or if you're a game player, it's like in practice, you just can't get it going. You just can't seem to make it click. But once those lights come on, those stands are full, you're like on fire.
Yeah.
Did you feel that way when you were having trouble? In practice, and because I know I went through that a lot and I still kind of, I don't know if it's the fact that there's no audience or only if I'm looking for some sort of gratification from the teacher or the team or something like that. But sometimes I just don't feel on in practice.
I definitely felt that way, that I would struggle in rehearsal and then would go do a show and things would go really, really well. But I would say that I was always sort of inconsistent. Like, I would make a move that like wouldn't work, or sometimes I would miss things. Like, I have a hard time. I don't have great hearing. And sometimes I would miss things. However, I know exactly what you're talking about. I never felt like I was the same person in rehearsal as I was on stage.
Yeah.
I also like, I was on a team for a while where we had one of our members coach us.
Huh.
right?
Abstract.
So weird. Like one of the people on our team, Kevin Mullaney, who's a terrific teacher and improviser, but there was just a total shortage of coaches at that time, and we just asked Kevin if he would coach us, and he did that. God, I think for like a year where he was on the team, but he also coached us.
Yeah.
And I will say this, like when not to get all granny, but we rehearsed 3 hours a week, mm-hmm. always in spaces that we paid for.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't rehearsing in somebody's house.
Yeah.
And I know that most people rehearse like in their living room or maybe in their backyard. Backyard's a little better. But I always appreciate it when somebody books a space.
Yeah.
Because rehearsing in somebody's house is rarely good. Like you're rarely good.
Yeah.
Like there are too many distractions. It's weird. The bathroom is always really weird.
Yeah.
Like it's just not good. Like I don't. When I moved here, that was a thing that I really kind of had to wrap my head around. And I used to coach a team here called Them Do This. It had Josh Simpson on it and Joe Hartzler, mm-hmm. and Marissa Penson and Alan Loeb, Rob Pointer. Some really, really great John Glover. Really, really great people. And that team booked space to rehearse at the complex.
Yeah.
And I so appreciate – they spent the money every week to rehearse, and they were very dedicated, and it paid off. I think that people are often half-assed about rehearsal.
Yeah.
Here and practice groups and that kind of thing. And it's like you have to decide early on that if you don't come, that you still have to pay, that yeah. you're still responsible, and you have to be dedicated. Like you have to be dedicated to that team, and it will pay off.
Yeah.
Like it eventually will pay off. I just went off on a tangent.
Oh, we needed it. It's great. I think that's very important because yeah, we do. I find that here too. You know, people. I'm not gonna sit here and act all holier than thou. I definitely sometimes have had to drag myself to practice.
Oh yeah.
Like you don't always want, especially when it's at somebody's house. You're distracted by that DVD case.
Yeah. You're distracted by the DVD case. You're distracted. Also, you can't really be loud.
Yeah.
You really can't. You can't jump up and down.
Can we keep it down? I have neighbors and you're going to scare my dog.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. And having pets.
Yeah.
Like, believe me, I love pets, but like, it's not good for improv rehearsals. So,
oh,
like,
man, when they're walking all around, you trying to do a scene, you got to pet them. It's like, get this damn dog out of here.
Exactly. So I always love it when people like book space here at Sunset.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, that's a neutral zone. You're going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be better in a neutral place than you are in somebody's,
yeah,
you know,
it's so
damp carpeted living room.
What do you think? Should we paint the walls in these classrooms?
At least one, please,
yeah.
Please, or put the logo or something. Yeah, it's very dry.
Yeah, because it puts me to sleep sometimes. I've been in that 3 hour Harold practice and just been like, I gotta step out, get some fresh air, go get a Starburst from the liquor store.
I'm used to it though now, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, like, I'm used to it now. When we first started though, it was cold.
When it first started, it would be like really cold. There's one room that I call the ghost vomit room. I think it's 229. It's that room in the corner.
Yeah,
that has a like it always smells like vomit, and then it has a air freshener.
Yeah,
that goes off like once every 10 minutes, and you'll be in there and it'll go.
Yeah,
and then you smell flowers for a second, and then it goes back to smelling like vomit.
You can't be too loud in that room because they can hear you
down
on stage.
Yeah,
if there's a show going on.
I think that room we were talking the other day with some people in the lobby. That room should be the doggy daycare room.
Oh, when people bring their dogs.
Yeah, and then everybody, if we establish that room as the doggy daycare room, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah. You just hear a bunch of dogs barking your whole rehearsal.
Why not?
That's funny. What type of improv forms or openings like do you love to do?
What kind of improv form or opening do I love to do? Well, I teach the mono scene.
Okay.
So I have a special affinity for that form because it feels like a play.
Yeah, it's really fun.
And I have fun teaching that too, because that is a real teamwork kind of a form that really, really shows like how good I think a team is at working together and how patient they are at working together.
Yeah.
And it feels theatrical, which I really, really like.
Yeah.
And it also, it's an unstructured, and yet you're always looking for ways to make it structured. And so for that, for the mono scene, we do scene painting. And I think that's really helpful, just establishing where we are, what's in that room that we can use. And it also helps kind of establish a game before we begin.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably my favorite thing right now. And that's also what we do. I do a show on Friday nights, every other Friday night at Sunset, called Location. And that's what we do for our form. And I really enjoy it because it's simple. It's easy listening to everybody and using it. It's easy to listen to everybody. It's easy to use other people's ideas. It's easy to remember because we're not scene painting for like 3 minutes. We're just scene painting a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's easy to use those specifics and those details. And we start – we're beginning in a world that's already been established, and I that's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
I also like I was thinking the other day about openings that we don't use anymore, like the stop and go.
What was that?
Like it would be meandering, like people meandering on stage, and then it was almost like a pattern game while you're walking. Or when people create their own openings that are really, really cool and inspirational. Like I always loved Mr. Town City's opening because it employed this exercise called the Flock of Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun to watch and so much fun to behold. And I thought, I think that's the best thing to do for a team is to kind of create your own thing.
Yeah.
People, don't you find on teams, like nobody's 100% happy with the opening?
No.
And people spend so much time, waste so much time on the opening. And the opening is the least important part of the Herald.
Yeah.
Right, don't you think? Like it's the 2 minutes.
We definitely like have had debates about our opening for a while. We did the last team I was on, we did interview style opening, and it was fun.
I mean, like a doc style
documentary. Uh-huh, that's not interview, documentary style.
Yeah.
And it was what they call a weird ass at IO.
Oh, yeah.
Stephanie Weir and Bob Dassey. But we did that, and it was fun. We did have debates about it, like how much, which direction should we go in? Should we play the game? We had coaches tell us different things, you know. Should we try to find the game inside these scenes and then just take them into our beats?
Mm-hmm.
Should we just, like Sean Diston came in a couple weeks ago and coached, well, now it'll be a couple months ago. This is airing in the future. he came in and was just like, when you're doing that opening, the first line should just be who you are to each other. Just be relationship.
Uh-huh.
And develop off of that. And so we did it our next show, and it was great.
It killed.
Yeah.
And that's such a simple, that's so good. That's such a good, simple adjustment. I love that opening.
Yeah.
The documentary opening. I like that a lot.
It's fun.
But you know what I mean? When like people agonize over this thing, and you're never going to find an opening that everybody's happy with, but also just be cool. If you don't like the opening, just find what you do like in it.
Yeah.
Like for the good of the team.
Just do it.
Yeah, like when people, I hate the squeaky wheel.
What? Which one is that one?
Well, no, the person on the team that's like, I don't want to do the, you know, that changes, that wants to change everything just to benefit his or her own way.
Yeah. And I think, but then usually that person will, always act like they're asking for your opinion after. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't, like, the whole team like, yeah, I'm down for that. Mm-hmm. The person like, I don't really want to do this. Like, what do you guys think? Like, mm-hmm. It's like, you clearly don't care what we think.
Right. So, yeah. You want to do what you want to do. Yeah. Like, I do feel like, when you're on a team, be on a fucking team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you have to do shit you don't want to do. And that drives me nuts. Yeah.
The process of naming a team is always super hard because everybody will like agree on a name. And then that one person who is constantly also saying like, guys, really, like, I don't care about the name, but I just don't want to be named that. It's like, well, if you don't care, then shut up.
I coached a team for a while of people who all went to UC Irvine together, like Zach mm-hmm. and Lindsay K-Tai,
yeah.
and Leland was on this team, and they put in three words, like that was it, and they came up with Chicken Choice Judy. And I was like, that's the best. That is like just easy. We're not agonizing over anything. Yeah. Or when people want the name to be cool, it's so lame.
Or it's super like ironic.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah. I do care about the name. I'm never one of the people who says, like, guys, I don't care about the name, because those are the people who always care about someone. So I say, listen, I care about the name.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be on Shit Daddy.
Like, no, I don't want to be on Shit Daddy either. Yeah. But I also, like, and no, you're right. Like, I do care a little bit, because I was on a team for 10 minutes called Value Pack.
Mm-hmm.
And we changed from Value Pack to Ice Nine. And I'm sorry, Joe O'Brien, I love you, but I hated the name Value Pack.
Yeah.
and yet it was like we all went, yes, we'll be on where we are Value Pack.
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems like those names that seem like you're trying, like you have like something comedy in it or funny, like Fun mm-hmm. Bucket. Like, yeah, it's like you don't want to go out and introduce yourself as that.
Or improv puns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes, Anderson.
When I have class shows, like I used to have, back when I was stupider, I would say, decide on a name. And then that would be like 10 minutes of people being like, no, this. And so now I say, I'll give you 30 seconds to come up with a name. And that nipped that in the bud. And now people just decide right away. And sometimes it's a good name and sometimes it's terrible, but yeah. It's at least done.
We've done this thing on the past couple of teams that I've had the name Maud and Harold, where we all submit our favorite five names.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pass the paper around. And somebody deletes a name that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to a certain name. And we did that this year. And this is a conversation for off the air. I'm not going to, but I'm not, just say the squeaky wheel was rolling.
Oh, like, yeah. Squeaky wheel has a lot of power sometimes.
Yeah. Especially on that first, when you're first meeting. Because it's like, we don't want to set the precedent of you shut up. We're like, you know,
mm-hmm,
we don't want to set,
mm-hmm.
You know, you want to be a team. You want to go, okay, you know what? You don't like it. We don't have to do it. Even though all other seven of us was like, cool. But the squeaky wheel says no. Five say yes. And that couple people are like, I mean, you know, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, care. Please care.
Yeah. Care a little bit more. You're right. You're right. I think that's a good advice.
It's important. So this, we're coming up on the end here a little bit, but, what is your personal approach to doing successful improv? What do you think? It's a ghost. Ghost room 229.
Yeah. You book a rehearsal in room 229. My personal approach to doing successful improv practice. I'm a better improviser when I'm rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's helpful. But also, like, I mean, this is such stupid advice, but say yes.
Yeah.
Say yes. We just did Harold auditions, which were super exciting. But it was surprising to me how often people felt like they had to shut down the idea or be like, what? That's nuts.
Yeah.
Rather than just say yes to the idea, or even like you can be the straight man and still sort of say yes to the idea. Mm-hmm. Like that to me was like a real, oh, this is nothing new, like in auditions. It's something that you see a lot. But it saying no or feeling like you have to be the straight man in a way where you're just shutting down the idea is never going to be good in the long run. Mm-hmm. Also, yes, the crazy a little more. Like just a little more. I think that being too technical is not good. I think that we should be okay with things being like a little loose and a little sloppy sometimes.
Yeah, it's fun, right?
It's more fun.
And it's okay to have fun sometimes. I know I hear people, a lot of people in this community, you know, kind of put down people who play fun. Because right. out of like, this is my favorite player because he just plays so technical. And it's like, at the end of the day, we're doing make-em-ups.
Yeah. Like, at the end, we're doing this silly thing. We're adults playing Maple Leaf.
Yeah.
Like, if it's, I'm going to have more fun watching a silly show. I might remember a smart show better, but I'm going to enjoy that silly show a lot more, like, in the moment. Like I think that... when you see somebody who's a really technical person embrace their silly side or be filthy,
yeah,
I die.
Yeah, it's great.
It's so great.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. It's so much, so much fun.
It is. Yeah. It is. We have a very fun community.
We do, right?
I love these people.
Me
I love
too.
The educators. I love Marla Black here.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine because... That was a surprise episode for me. You were in when you guys had to move into their precinct.
Right. I had a lot of figurines.
Yeah, all those figurines. You know, that was really funny. And the way you, at the end, when she had that figurine, she was about to drop, and you snapped out that Billy Club.
Oh.
You wouldn't.
That was a very exciting day because it was those things, the real things, are really heavy.
Yeah.
And mine, that was very lightweight.
Oh, they didn't have a real one?
It was like...
Because you had to hit somebody with it.
No, I didn't hit her. I just went, like I'm going into the fight. And then once she smashed my cow, I was done.
That was great.
That was fun. I loved that. I love that show.
Was it fun to work on?
Oh, yeah.
Phil Jackson great. Writes for that show.
Yes.
And Gil Azari's on there, too?
Is he?
He used to be, I think.
That episode was written by David Phillips.
Oh, okay.
Who was a dream.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was a really fun week because we're always in the background. So we were there for pretty much the whole week.
Yeah.
It was nice.
So funny.
It was a little gift before Christmas.
Yeah.
in 2015.
That's great.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for noticing my, I don't know what that, it's not a Billy Club.
Yeah. What is that called? Nightstick? A day stick.
Yeah. It's like it's a telescoping.
Yeah.
Isn't that mechanism? Whatever.
It's fun. Whatever it is, it's fun.
Telescoping stick. Thank you.
This has been an amazing, so lit episode of Long Form Conversation. Thank you for talking with me.
Oh, thank you for talking to me and asking me questions.
I really enjoyed learning about your journey, learning about your process. I love asking. I'm a history buff. And so I love asking about like what the early days and stuff were like, and I feel like we got that covered. I hope this episode was informative to people because I was kind of being self-indulgent with my questions, wanting to know how were the pipes in the building at the UCB New York?
Oh, they were full of rats. Full of rats.
Rats in the front room, roaches in the pipes. UCB Theater. It's 80s rap. I think of 80s rap when I think of New York. And that was a long-form conversation, the most lit long-form conversation. I hope everybody's done with your Hennessy bottles. Tune in next week when Julie Brister will be the host of Long Form Conversations. This is going to be great. It's going to be dope. She's going to ask a bunch of dope questions. I hope this episode was informative to you. Turn up in the improv world. Turn up in everyday life. I'm Carl Tart. Have a great day.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.